It's time for the Talent Talk Radio Show, brought to you by People G2, a nationwide leader in background checks and employment screening solutions. People G2 gives their clients access to the best human capital management and due diligence tools available. They are dedicated to helping their clients with all of their people-related decisions. To learn more, go to www.peopleg2.com. Talent Talk centers on the topics of talent recruitment and management, leadership development, company culture, and employee engagement. These are all timely topics for CEOs, entrepreneurs, HR professionals, and business leaders. We hope that as you tune in to listen each week, whether to the live broadcast or to the podcast on iTunes or iHeartRadio, that you hear something you can take away that will help you grow and impact your career in a positive way. And now, here's the host of the Talent Talk Radio Show, the founder and CEO of People G2, Chris Dyer.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in here to Talent Talk. And joining me, I'm actually in studio live today, which is a little change for me. Yeah, I'm usually calling in from Skype or though I'm at home or on the road or whatever, but it's nice to be in the studio and my first guest as well is in the studio, so we should have a good show. You know, I've met so many kind of, I call them cool and inspiring leaders at different events and groups and things that I have the privilege of being involved in. And today is a great example of that. And so I meet these people and we end up having these really cool conversations. And really that's where the radio show kind of came out of was, hey, let's have this conversation together live and on the radio so that other people can hear it. Maybe they can learn something. Maybe they can think of something new to do. Maybe start another dialogue within their company based on some of the things that we're talking about and thinking about as far as helping companies, helping our culture, helping our employees and our talent and everything else that my guests seem to be interested in. So we are, if you're listening live, we're also streaming this. OC Talk Radio on Facebook is streaming this live as well, and we'll repost that later so you can see this interview on video if you'd like. But as I mentioned, Talent Talk is live every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and most of you kind of come in on afterwards and check us out on iTunes, listen to us on iHeartRadio, and I'm really just so happy. We're averaging over 10,000 people a day downloading one of our podcasts and from one of the different platforms, and just a big thank you to everyone who's showing up and participating. But speaking of participating, we're really working on wanting to get more of you to kind of jump in on the conversation, and we can do that on Twitter. So if you're on Twitter, whether it's you're listening live or after the show's already aired, ask us a question, give us a comment, give us some feedback, ask one of our guests a question. All of that is great. My producer, Mike, will try to feed me in any of the live questions into the show, and we can see if we can trip up any of our guests. Well, we're not that kind of show. We're not going to try to trip anybody up. But maybe we'll get a good question and get the dialogue going a little deeper. So my first guest today in studio will be Patty. Is it Grimm?
Patty Grimm, like Grimm's Fairy Tales and Grimm the TV show.
And you know, I look at it and I want to say Grime, but that's wrong. There's right. Two M's. It's Grimm.
Grimm.
But I have a habit of messing everyone's names up on this show. So it's the inner demon in my head that's trying to get me to say it wrong. But she's an author, speaker, radio show host here, even on the station, and also a coach. So we're going to get to talk to her in depth. After she's done, my second guest will be Jim Palmer. He's the founder of Dream Business Coaching's program, and he's written a book and also runs the Dream Business Academy. And we'll get more from him later. But, Patty, welcome to the show, and welcome to the other side of the desk.
Well, this is kind of funny because my show's Friday at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock every Friday, and I'm usually on the other side. So this is right. Really the first time I think I've been on this side or recently been on this side of the mic. And so it's kind of weird.
It's kind of like that time when someone else drives your car and you're sitting in the passenger seat going, this isn't right.
Yes, and you're braking and braking and why aren't they stopping?
So why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself,
yep.
What you're doing, you know, all the cool things about you that we should know.
Let's see. I can start out with I was born in Wheeling, West By God, Virginia.
Wow.
And that's actually what the sign says going in and out of town. You're coming into or leaving Wheeling, West By God, Virginia. But grew up mostly in California. My dad moved here when I was quite young. And so was a middle child in a middle-class family, basically grew up around here. Very sports-oriented family, very into sports and cars. Played tennis from the time I was 7. Played softball, volleyball, a whole bunch of different sports. And when I graduated from college, I started out as a teacher. I was going to be a teacher at North Torrance High School. Well, California passed Proposition 13, which laid off all new teachers. So I went to my godfather, who was a big wig at Bank of America, and said, I need a job. Well, I got into banking, and I fell in love with it. And I was a vice president of First Interstate Bank. I got got to create my own title. So my title was Vice President of Customer and People Excellence for all of Southern California for the bank. And so I was a vice president, 28 years old. Mm-hmm. A couple years later, the bank had gone through a big culture change. I loved what I was doing. And so I went to my VP, who said I could have any job I wanted. And I said, none of them. I'd like to come back and train all of your leaders to be leaders and how to be better at what they do in their jobs, etc. So I walked out, had my consulting company for 10 years, almost 12 years, moved to Seattle, got hired by Microsoft. So I was hired by Microsoft to change their enterprise sales teams from being what our customers called brains on a stick to being solution sellers, relationship sellers. And I was at Microsoft for 15 years. When I retired 4 years ago, I was down here at the local beach with my brother-in-law and sister. And my brother-in-law said, if you retired from Microsoft, why are you still living in Seattle? We went home, put the house on the market, sold the house in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and basically moved back to California.
Well, welcome back to California.
Absolutely.
Glad you came back. It's a great little story there, and a good kind of a good foundation to kind of understand who you are and where you're kind of coming from. And I know one of the hats you wear, because you do a lot of different things, is you did kind of get back into teaching eventually, right?
Now
you're
an
instructor for Brandman University, where you teach change management and leadership and team mm-hmm. development. So maybe what are some of the cutting-edge ideas that you're really looking at in that role right now?
Well, part of what I'm doing is I'm really focusing my business on helping organizations attract, retain, and motivate their top women leaders. And so my book, which is on Amazon, which I will plug and hold up, is called Quiet Women Never Change History, Be Strong, Stand Up, Stand Out, with the subtitle of Let's Go Kick Some Glass, which has really become my branding. That's why I'm always dressed in red. I wear red high heels to really focus on how women can go about kicking glass and not kissing it.
Right. Well, and I think that's a really important message that you're kind of giving, to be strong. There's so many mixed messages, what we expect.
Right.
With gender roles, things that how we expect people to approach things. And sometimes it's not just women. It's anybody in the organization
yeah.
about standing up and saying something and being strong and not, you know, taking the path of least resistance. But I like how you're focusing in on a particular group of people, because they probably need the most help.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is, people don't really realize this. In fact, I had somebody ping me on Facebook after the Women's March and said, well, what did women actually lose? The fact is, we actually really never gained it. Women's pay is still 80% for a Caucasian women of what men make for the same job.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine making 80 cents on a dollar versus what your male counterpart is making. Women's pay has only gone up 1% in the last decade. So
right.
at this rate of change, it will take 179 years for women to achieve pay equality. The numbers for African American and Asian women are 60 and 53, which is even worse.
Right. It's even worse, right.
So doing things specifically within organizations and helping women become self-empowered. So my book outlines 5 key things women can do, some things organizations can do, and some things men can do.
What are some of those things, if you don't mind? We don't want to
yeah.
give away the whole book, but
yeah.
maybe we could talk about, you know, in general, some of the things that you're suggesting.
Yeah, well, the book has very specific exercises in it. And as you said, some of these things apply to men as well as women. So
mm-hmm.
the first one is be strong. So the first one is know what your strengths are. And I walk people through a process of how to figure out their strengths, or I recommend they buy the book Strength Finder, anything by Marcus Buckingham,
right.
or they take a DISC profile, D-I-S-C profile, any of those to figure out their strengths. Because if you find career and job opportunities that fit your strength, you're going to be more productive,
mm-hmm.
you're going to contribute more to the organization, you're going to get recognized, and you'll have a whole lot less stress, because everybody is born with a certain strength, like you're born left-handed or right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And while you can do the opposite, your strengths are really what's going to help you be more productive. So that's number one.
Yeah, and I love the right-hand, left-hand thing, because no one walks around telling you if you're right-handed, you know, you really should work on your left hand more. You really should
try
to be able to write more with your left. Nobody says that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But yet we show up to work, and they're like, you know, you're not so good at programming. You should really work on – no, I'm a communicator, or whatever it is
right.
that you're good at, right?
Right. And the idea behind the whole thing with Strength Finder is if you practice focusing on, you know, improving your weaknesses, you're going to get average at best. And you'll never feel comfortable.
Right.
You can write with your other hand. It just feels ridiculous.
Right.
If you focus on your strengths, you're going to improve at quantum leaps.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. Number two is to stand up. And this can go for anybody. In order to stand up, you need a foundation to stand on. And I help people write their own personal leadership vision.
Right.
So in a combination with your strengths and your vision, you should find organizations that match that so you can be more productive. So my personal vision is to make a difference and empower people to reach their full potential. And I walk people through a process of take a piece of paper, go to your favorite place, the beach, which is mine, the mountains, the garden, outside a meditation room, and imagine in 5 years somebody's going to write an article or do a story about you. And what do you want that to say? And I tell people to kind of fine-tune that over a period of time and eventually come down to a sentence, about 12 words or less, and use that to make your decision. So how I used that recently was when I was working at Microsoft, because I was there for 15 years, and I still do consulting for them. I kind of do my old job part-time. I had a choice of going to Asia to run the Asia-Pacific Customer and Sales Excellence Team or going to Europe and running the Business and Sales Excellence Team. Equal pay, great reporting relationship, everything was equal except one thing. Asia had 160 people on the headquarters staff to service 14 countries with about 20 different languages. Europe had 1,000 people. Now, where do you think I'd have the biggest chance to make a difference and help people reach their full potential? Asia was easy.
Right.
Yeah, I literally called my husband from this big conference I was working at and I was actually speaking at, and he knew we were going back and forth between Germany and Singapore, basically, and I said, you know, pack the house, you got 4 weeks, we got to move. And he said, do I pack flip-flops or snowshoes? And I said, pack the flip-flops. Number three is stand out. Mm-hmm. So women in particular need to be more valuable, more visible, and more vocal. That comes across in negotiating for salary, for pay, for the job you deserve, for time off, any of those kinds of things. But be valuable first based on your strengths and your vision. Mm-hmm. Really focus on the things you bring to the table and become invaluable to your organization. And then be more visible and be more vocal. This applies to women but also to men. If you're waiting for somebody to tap you on the shoulder and say, Chris, here's your next promotion, would you like it? You're going to be waiting a really long time.
Right.
And women don't tend to, you know, stand up enough about some of those things and say, I did this. If a woman does something well, she'll generally say, my team did this. And there's a way you can do that that's very empowering to your team, but also to being able to say the word I. So what you can say is, you know, say to a manager, a senior person, you gave me a very difficult task to do. I pulled together my team. My team and I pull together the solution, and here's what I'm presenting to you on behalf of my team. So you've used the word I.
Right. You certainly are still a team player, but yeah, you've angled it enough to show them your value. Yeah. And it's surprising to me that we don't spend any sort of time, especially in business schools or whatever, to show help people be able to articulate these types of things, right?
Yeah.
We're not asking you to be an overly political animal. We're not asking you to be...
Kiss tail.
Right, kiss tail. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to let people know what you've done well. And and also to be honest and open about your failures or your mistakes or what you've learned or whatever it is so that people can trust you and feel like you're going to be a great person to move up in organizations.
Yeah, I encourage people to keep a gratitude file, right? I have one on my computer and one actually a physical file in case my computer ever crashes. You hate to have that happen, but it does happen. And anytime I get a compliment letter from somebody, oh, that was a great speech or a great workshop or you really helped me, I keep all of those in a file. Now, when I worked within an organization, when it came time to write my performance review, I had a year's worth of evidence of here's all the things that I did. Here's the project that came in on time under budget. Here are the facts of what I did. You know, here are the things that I did. And then you've got more ways to show that you're doing well. I also used the file when I was having a really bad day. To kind of open it up and go, I'm okay.
Right. Today might be bad, but the last 3 months were pretty good.
No, pretty good. Yeah. So number four is, especially for women, is be number one on your things to do list. Mm-hmm. You cannot give away what you do not own. And so just like on the airplane, you're getting on a plane today, put on your oxygen mask first before you help somebody else.
And you know, that might be the best piece of advice I've heard in a long time, especially for women.
Yes.
And I don't know if this is, I'm sure someone smarter than me could tell us if this is a genetic thing, is this a social thing, something that women learn, but it certainly seems like a majority of women have this instinct, right, this natural thing to help someone else first, like to put the kid's mask on first,
right?
My wife would probably put our kid's mask on first and then pass out because she was doing theirs, right? And yet in the workplace, that's killing them.
Yeah, it's killing them. Right. It almost killed me. So I tell my story. You know, Paul's heard this a number of times. I had 14 great years at Microsoft. I went from getting my biggest raise, biggest bonus, biggest amount of stock options in 1 year to all of a sudden being a crash and burn. I literally crashed and burned so hard, which is one of the reasons I wrote the book, is to prevent other women from crashing and burning. And what I had done is stop taking care of myself. I wasn't doing the things I needed to do with my vision. I wasn't following my value. I wasn't following my spirituality. I was doing everything for everybody else, and I imploded and took a four-month leave of absence and sabbatical to figure out my next career move. And so I tell people, you know, you've got to take care of yourself. Eat, pray, love, meditate, whatever, you know, develop yourself. Read your own, you know, read books that are in your area. Do things to take care of yourself, because
and probably follow your own advice, right?
Yeah, really. that's what I did, right? I mean, I crashed, but I came back
even
stronger.
They're probably out there telling people you should be doing this, but not doing
it
themselves, right?
Exactly. My favorite was my mentor when I was at Microsoft. It was this wonderful woman, and it was after one of these big meetings where there are obviously Starbucks cups everywhere, because we were in Seattle, Redmond area. So at the meeting, there were all these Starbucks cups. And being a woman, I started to pick up all the cups. And my mentor from the corner of the room literally yells, "Put the cups down." And I kind of stopped and sort of paused for a second. She goes, "When you pick up the cups, you look like an admin." And I hadn't even thought about it. She goes, "Everybody has a mother. You don't have to take care of everybody else. You should be taking care of yourself." And the final one is pay it forward. So a friend of mine, Michelle Berquist, has a group called Connected Women of Influence, and she interviewed 500 men about the biggest mistake women make that sabotage their careers, according to men. The number one thing is women tend to compete and push each other down versus help collaborate and lift each other up. And so, you know, pay it forward is be a mentor. Regardless of your age, if you're a millennial, you can be mentoring girls in college or even in groups like Girls Inc., where you're working with middle school girls. So be a mentor, find a mentor, either a man or a woman, both are equally great, and raise brave girls, which is something dads and women can do, is raise brave girls to be risk takers, not perfectionists, because some of that caring you talked about. Is really comes down to girls are still raised to be perfectionists, even in sports.
Right.
Watch a girls' soccer team, watch a boys' soccer team. Watch a girls' softball team, watch a boys' softball team. The girls have to be dressed perfectly with a little ribbon in their hair, has to be the right color, and if the girl falls down, everybody runs over and says, "Oh, Susie, are you okay?" The boy shows up, shoes don't match, socks don't match, uniform's probably dirty, their hair's probably not combed, and they probably even haven't brushed their teeth.
Yeah.
And he falls down and we all go, "Johnny, get up. You're not hurt. Walk it off."
Right. I had this argument. I used to coach a lot of women's athletics. And the referees will stop the game if a girl falls down. I mean, it's just very, like, sexist. I'm like, if the boy fell down, you would just keep going.
You would just
ignore the boy.
Exactly.
If the girl fell over and you can see it in their faces. I've called them out on it, and they don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
But it starts to sink in a little. But there's a totally different reaction when a girl gets hurt, a boy gets hurt in those settings.
And so that perfectionism of little girls turns into procrastination. It turns into the imposter syndrome. I'm never good enough.
Right.
Like even Sheryl Sandberg, CEO of Facebook now, when she was going from Google to Facebook, and she wrote the book Lean In, great book, and I've met Sheryl. And so it's interesting that she said that even her at that level, she was COO of Google. She turned Google's culture around. She's talking to Mark Zuckerberg about her salary. And in her own mind, she's thinking, am I worth this?
Right.
I mean, she's like the role model of those, one of the, you know, super successful women. So, you know, getting over that imposter syndrome, I'm never good enough. A woman does a presentation, and there's one little typo, right? And it can throw her off her game during the meeting, but afterwards she's going to self-critique of, oh, my gosh, I should have caught that. A guy does it, they're going to go, "Oh, isn't that funny? I spelled the word wrong."
Right.
And they're going to think they did a great presentation, high five, and go from there. So we have to work on those couple of components.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a few minutes ago about mentoring, and I think that's a really, really important point. I want to make sure we kind of go maybe talk a little bit deeper. And unless maybe you're day one on the job, or you're at the last day of the job of your working career, right?
Right.
Those two extremes aside, I kind of feel like everybody should be mentoring somebody and being mentored by somebody.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And because it helps you grow so much in so many ways to have someone who's pulling you along, and then someone who you're pulling along. I mean, it's just, and yet there are certainly organizations that do this well, and they talk about it. But it's almost like, maybe we need a cultural revolution or something for people to start thinking about doing this all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, some of us have gone back and coached kids. Some of us have gone back and put ourselves in those roles, but most people don't.
Yeah.
And they don't want someone, they either don't seek it or they don't want someone to help them.
Yeah.
You know, they don't look stupid. They want to figure out themselves. I don't know what that is. If there's a right answer, I want that answer. I don't care if I don't want to come up with it. Just tell me the right answer so I can save myself all this work and time.
You want somebody you can build a trusting relationship with that can not only tell you what you're doing well, but give you advice about what you could be doing differently.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That will sit down with you and help you work through some of those tough times, or even be a sounding board. My best mentors were two British gentlemen when I lived in Asia, and I'll never forget this. They came by my desk one day, and they were in these big offices, and we were all in cubicles, but we had the view of Singapore, right? All the cubicle people, cubies, right?
Right.
And they came to my desk and they said, "Are you happy?" Now, being a woman, my first response was, "Well, I was happy till you asked me that question." But they pulled me into their office and they said, "We want to make sure you're happy and we want to put you on this executive potential program." And I was like, wow. And so they helped me throughout my whole time there. They would critique my PowerPoints. They would help me figure out my story. They would say, you know, "You've got a great story, but there's too much here. Cut it in half."
Right.
So they were able to do that. And so so people say, "Well, where do I find a mentor?" I said, "Well, if you're in a company, look for somebody a couple levels above you, probably in another department, and ask them for coffee. To start with, and say, you know, I really admire you. I'd love to know how you got to where you are."
Right.
And that can turn into a formal mentorship or even just coffee once a month. Or you ask your mentor questions like, "Well, what should I be reading? What magazine should I read? What articles? Are there some classes I could take to round up my career?" So use them as a sounding board. So it's a really important piece of that.
Yeah, I mean, it can be difficult to find that right person, but you're right. It takes just a small step.
Yeah.
Get coffee, have a conversation. I mean, that's how any of my mentors have been. No one like knocked on my door and said, "Hello, can I be your mentor, please?"
Yeah.
I mean, it just sort of
happens,
and suddenly you realize that they're your mentor, and then of course once you realize that, then you need to thank them and continue to feed that. But It's just one of those things. I don't know if we'll get to that point where everybody's is doing that. And it's almost like with equal pay for it within the gender pay. You know, will we ever get there on our own, or do we need? Is this one of those times when government can come in and make a difference? Do we need a law that says it's got to be this way, right?
Well, Governor Brown just signed a bill that is basically to ensure equal pay for women, that you can no longer ask what somebody's salary was at their previous job, because if your salary was low, it's going to stay low. An interesting Harvard study had a group of recent Harvard graduates, so you know, women and men at the top of their career and of their skills. 50% of the men asked for higher starting salary. Only 17% of the women did.
Right.
So they started out at $4,000 to $8,000 more than the women. So we have to do some things. And there's things organizations can do to help women. And there's things men can do. In my research, so I did about 3 years of research and interviewed lots of people.
The only problem with that is that companies aren't necessarily motivated to help women there, right? They'd rather save the money.
Well, yeah, and there's some things they can do that they don't have to spend a lot of money on, right?
So it's almost like another force, or women themselves have to take that on, because companies are like, "Well, fine, if you want to work for $10,000 less, we'll take the money and pocket it over here, or put it in research and development or whatever, or hire three more people." And so they're not going to come to you and say, "You know, you're not really being paid enough." I mean, the average company's not going to do that.
Well, some of the things we found in the research that I did with Catalyst and Gallup and McKinsey and all of those, because I interviewed over almost 2,000 people for my book, and then I also did all the other research. And what they say, that what makes exceptional workplaces for organizations to attract, motivate, and retain women, there's very similar parallels between women and millennials in the foundation things that they want.
Hmm.
They want an organization with a mission, vision, and values they can believe in. So things like sustainability or things like company culture matter to them. They want a place where people are going to develop them. One of the reasons millennials tend to work better for women is that they tend to be better developers of people, from my research and other research. So they can focus on the mission, vision, values, and find people that fit those kinds of things. They can look at things like giving them opportunities to advance. Again, some of the research shows that men get promoted on potential, women get promoted on performance. So you've probably frequently heard, "Chris, you'd make a great senior leader. You have the potential."
Mm-hmm.
Women have to prove themselves in a role, and they have to perform to get promoted. And then once they get to that role, they need to prove themselves again. So you can start looking for women with potential to be senior leaders. I offer a series of workshops for women. That's a six-month program. It's one workshop a month with some assignments in between and mentorship that you can develop your top women so that you keep them, because women are leaving the workforce in pretty big numbers. They're either finding their own company, they're going someplace else where they're going to be developed, that's got the right culture, or they're starting nonprofits, or they're just completely leaving the workforce. So we have to retain those women.
I use the sportscaster test as my kind of litmus test of whether or not we're making any progress, because I've heard over and over that ESPN and these different places, if a guy walks in, he played football at Ohio State, he's got a good voice and liking, they pick him up. If a woman comes in, they give her like a 500-question thing about every stat, every sports thing, and it's just to prove that she's good enough and knows enough about sports to be there, but it's just assumed the guy knows enough because he played football at some well-known university, right?
Yeah.
And that's total crap.
Yeah. I grew up with a sports family, so my favorite times were going to Dodger games with my dad. When I was 8 years, going to doubleheaders and never leaving a game early, regardless of the score or rain.
I would have never done doubleheaders. So you're a better sports fan than I
was. I was 8 years old with my little stat book out there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I'm married to a football coach. My son's a football coach. My Sunday is dedicated. Saturdays are dedicated to college football. Go Washington Huskies. Go Dogs. And our Sundays are dedicated to football. And my life has been centered around a football field for the last 34 years.
Well, this has gone by so quickly. We are actually out of time. I want to really appreciate you, how much I appreciate you coming in and being on the other side of the desk and having this great conversation with us. How can people get a hold of you or learn more about you if they want to work with you?
Yeah, so they can get my book, Quiet Women Never Change History, Be Strong, Stand Up, Stand Out. Let's Go Kick Some Glass. You can get that on Amazon. You can reach me at, easiest way is probably my email. It's pattygrimmatlive.com, and that's P-A-T-T-I-E. G-R-I-M-M at L-I-V-E.com. People can call me or text me. My cell is 425-289-6619. I do keynotes, workshops, webinars, a whole variety of things. Focus on leadership development overall and culture, but specifically recently in the last couple of years on bringing great women into the world and keeping them in the organizations.
Well, fantastic. I hope people check out your book. And thank you so much for being here. You've been a real pleasure. And, we need to have you come back here pretty quick, and we'll just keep going.
Yeah, well, I've got a whole other book called Play the Game by Your Rules.
Oh, there we go.
So powerful negotiation skills for women.
We'll bring you in for that one. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Thanks, Chris.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
Well, welcome back to the Talent Talk Radio Show. If you've just tuning in, we missed a great interview with Patty Graham. You can go back and find that on our podcast later on iTunes or iHeart, or you can even go to the OC Talk Radio and probably find the video of us, which should be up there by now, I would hope. I think it is. And hear our interview there on Facebook. So, but we have another great guest here coming up. Jim Palmer is the founder of Dream Business Coaching's program and also Dream Business Academy. As a reminder, don't forget to tweet, send us your questions to @PeopleG2, use that hashtag Talent Talk. love to have you throw in some questions here that we can give to Jim or give us your feedback. So really appreciate it. Don't forget, you can also go to talenttalkradio.com to find our shows if you're not on iTunes or iHeartRadio. So, Jim, welcome to the show.
Chris, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. So why don't you tell everyone a little about yourself, what you're currently doing, you know, kind of in this area of coaching.
Well, I started my first business in 2001, and my first business I grew to multiple six figures, and then I kind of quit that and got into internet marketing and grew several internet businesses, and then I started coaching in 2009 and started really growing that business and hired a team of 13 virtual assistants to run the internet businesses while I grew my coaching program. And earlier this year, my wife and I sold our house and we moved on to a yacht, and we're currently in Rhode Island, but we're going to be heading down to Florida, so we're able to run the businesses and have a hell of an adventure on our boat.
Well, that sounds like quite an adventure. And so if you're on a boat and you're using it all the time, you may actually be enjoying it, because we always make the joke with everyone I know who owns a boat that, you know, it's the first day and the last day are the best days you own a boat. So
it's very true. And it's not for the faint of heart, I'll tell you that. But, yeah, it's a big boat. I mean, it's our home. We named it Floating Home. So, but, you know, we raised four kids. We got three grandkids. We lived in our house for 30 years, and we just felt, when Stephanie retired from her position in child care development, that was our last kind of geographical tie, so to speak, and I could do my job anywhere, and that's when we decided to go on this big adventure.
Well, it sounds like a great adventure, and making me jealous, because my wife and I have talked about, you know, one day would we do something different? Would we go live in London, or would we, you know, get on a boat, do something after you kind of gotten through, I guess, that middle part of your life where you're maybe tied to a house and all those other things. So it gave us something to look forward to. When you decide then to kind of make kind of really focus in on small businesses and entrepreneurs and stuff, so it sounds like the work that you're doing is really kind of helping specific types of businesses, size of businesses, and certain people. So what kind of got you into that focus? Maybe we can start there.
I've always worked, even my first job, I worked at a small bicycle shop. I've always worked for entrepreneurs. Even when I was director of a national franchise program, I worked directly with the entrepreneur owner who started the program with one store. And so in 2001, of course, I became an entrepreneur. And so, I mean, it never occurred to me to work for large corporations. While I've had some large corporations as clients in my first business, I found those to be the most distressing, because you had to run everything by about 10 people and everything was late and things like that. Entrepreneurs, for the most part, are the decision makers. They're the ones who kind of drive the train, so to speak. And so that's just always been who I'm most comfortable with, and obviously where I have most of my experience.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about that. 13 different people making decisions. When we have to work with big companies, it's not only do 13 different people need to make a decision, then by the time you get to the 13th person, the first and second person have now changed their minds, and they've now gone a different direction. So,
yeah, Chris, I spent two terms on a board for a nonprofit just a short time ago, which I really enjoyed. But most of the people I found on the board were retired corporate people or of that mindset. And I come home from a couple of meetings, and I tell Stephanie, we spent an hour talking about whether to give somebody in the office a 1.5% raise, which is about $1,800. I said, can we just take a collection and be done with this and move on to something more important? I mean,
right.
The mindset is very different between not only corporate, but actually kind of small business owner and entrepreneur actually have somewhat of a different mindset.
So what are some of the challenges then? You know, you yourself are an entrepreneur, you're working with entrepreneurs. What are some of the things or challenges you kind of seeing arising when people are looking at things like trying to implement business development, maybe grow their leaders, maybe expand their management styles with their talent? You know, is there certain advice that you're giving or that you're things that you're really looking at for new business owners to kind of really focus in on or really kind of think about as they're moving forward with you?
Yeah, you know what? That the entrepreneur very often is their own worst enemy. They become the bottleneck in the growth of their business. because entrepreneurs, well, like a lot of people, can have a big ego, I guess, and they say something similar to, well, nobody can do it as good or as fast or as inexpensive than I can, so why would I hire and pay somebody else to do it for me? And, you know, you just can't be doing task-oriented stuff, number one. Number two, if you're doing everything, then you're really not going to grow as quickly as you want. I mean, it's such an important thing. There's a chapter in one of my books I call Delegate or Stay Small Forever, because everybody has the same 24 hours in a day. And I'll tell you this, you know, when I started growing my team of virtual assistants, it always feels, Chris, like you're putting the cart before the horse a little bit. But the great Harvey McKay had a book, I think it was called Dig Your Well Before You Are Thirsty. And what that means to me is if there's things that are not getting done, if there's things on your to-do list for more than a reasonable amount of time, if that book that you keep promising to write, which is going to help, you know, advance your company, has been 6 months or a year in the making, you are thirsty, and you need to be delegating some of the other things. Now, as far as when to hire, who to hire, I've always, career, I've always hired for attitude and train. And I think, a lot of people would agree with hiring the right person for attitude and training them. But the one thing that I learned very early on in my career, Chris, was there's a third step. You have to empower them to actually do the job, empower them to act on your behalf. What I found in a lot of time I spent in retail is the people, even though they're trained, they kind of know what they're doing. If a situation arises with a customer or a client, very often their kind of initial knee-jerk reaction is to kind of protect the company, protect the boss, protect the profits. And in reality, I believe you should make the customer happy. If you make the customers happy, you're ultimately going to grow a more profitable business. So hire for attitude, train them, but then also empower them to do the job that you're assigning to them.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, if they are ultimately can have the autonomy to make that decision, you've trained them, you make them understand, you know, ultimately maybe what you would do, or at least have them think in a way in which maybe you would try to think that way yourself. But if you empower them, if you say, hey, listen, if you were the CEO, right, you were the boss, what would you do to make this happen? And I love your kind of phrasing that thinking about protecting everyone, which is certainly natural, but that's not how we think as entrepreneurs or CEOs. And we're thinking, because we're at the top of that level, we're thinking about how to keep the client, how to make them happy, not how to defend everybody.
Exactly.
And that's a completely different scenario for someone who's not the CEO, not the business owner. So I think it's really, really great advice. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what Dream Business Academy is, and certainly the impact that it's having on business leaders.
Sure. You know, it's a 3-day live event that I'm doing my seventh one the end of September. And it's something I probably, in all candor, I should have started a couple of years ago, but you know, I dragged my feet on it. It's a fairly big undertaking, expense-wise and every other wise. But anyway, it turns out that, I'm pretty good at teaching for 3 days straight. And what I do is I want to do something different. For a while there, I was becoming a seminar junkie, and it seemed like every seminar was you put up a speaker every hour on the hour, and they're going to tell you how great they are, and then they're going to sell you their program. So I'm doing it a little differently. I run a pitch-free event. It's all actionable teaching. I tell everybody my story from the ground up, the mistakes, the good, the bad, the ugly, how to get over your mindset. I bring my own personal mindset coach to the event to give some really good things to help people over their own money issues or success issues. And then what we do, Chris, on the third day is I do multiple profit seats, where I bring people up on the stage, and for 15 or 20 minutes, I'll kind of do a remake on their business, which is as exciting for them as for the people in the audience. So, yeah, it's a really good event. It's small. I purposely keep it to about 50 people, so we all get to know each other, and people feel a little more comfortable opening up and sharing and things like that.
So wait, back up here. So you bring them up on stage, and what do you do with one of them?
Well, a lot of people call it a hot seat. I call it a profit seat because by the end of it, their profits are going to go up. I have a series of questions that I can ask. I'll quickly find out where their strengths are, what's holding them back, and in a lot of cases, it has to do with their brand. people are really talking about, you know, kind of features and benefits, so to speak. And what I tell people is you're going to make infinitely more money for who you are than what you do. So it's much more about your brand. It's much more about being known as the go-to authority in your niche. You don't want to be in a position where you're always pursuing new business. You want to be the expert who's pursued because you have that reputation. And so that's in a nutshell, that's kind of what I do.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I love that idea of the profit seat or the hot seat. I mean, you kind of push people in that kind of setting, you can really get some growth. You can get them to see some things that maybe, well, maybe they know, but they don't want to admit, right? Or that they haven't wanted to bring to the surface quite yet. So it's
pretty tough.
Yeah.
It can be a tough environment. I'll tell you, I always ask, my way is, and the people who've known me a long time, they call it tough love, but I'll ask permission. I'll sometimes say, may I have your permission to speak candidly? And some of the people I look out that know me well, they kind of roll their eyes, go, here it comes. And I'll just lay it out there because I think time is too short to sugarcoat anything, you know, and I'll just give it to them straight. This is what I think you ought to do. I think you ought to do this, 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 and you should probably do it in the next 30 days. And so it's pretty fun. It's a high energy day for sure.
So, I mean, that you're kind of talking a little bit synonymously of what I have done within inside like my CEO group, where we get together once a month, and the particular group I'm in is pretty brutal. I mean, they'll tell you right out that, you know, whatever it is you're thinking about is you know, what keeps you up at night. And they're going, I can't believe that's what's keeping you up. You got to be thinking about this, this, and this. And we get up once a year and give a full presentation, and everyone just kind of beats you. It's kind of that similar hot seat where everyone, you know, is kind of pushing your buttons and helping you think about the things you should think about. But, you know, there's a lot of opportunities like that for people who are entrepreneurs or in business. Do you think that's a good thing or good opportunity maybe for people who are somewhere in the middle inside of an organization? You know, should we be putting people in a hot seat and asking them to grow and to become better in a similar way?
Well, I think you should. I mean, you know, I personally don't think anybody was created for mediocrity. I think everybody has greatness. I tell people you have seeds of greatness within you, but you've got to be willing to go through some stuff. You know, at my last event, I gave everybody a packet of seeds, and like, what are we doing with a packet of wildflower seeds? I think, well, this is just potential beauty. You have to take the seeds, open them up. You got to sprinkle them in the dirt. You got to water them, and you got to go through this process before it turns into this beautiful field. It's like that as an entrepreneur. You can't just get your free business cards from Vistaprint and create some homemade website and expect to have a six-figure business. I mean, it doesn't work like that. And, you know, I don't think there's any shortage of people with dreams and hopes and desires to be successful. But, man, it is not easy. I mean, the stat that's been around for probably 50 or 80 or 100 years is that 80% of small businesses will fail in the first 3 to 5 years. That's still true today, Chris. And, you know, if more people were part of groups like you that you belong to and like Dream Business Academy, I mean, those are the people who are by and large going to end up growing more successful.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we were just talking with Patty before you came on about being a mentor and having mentors. And that is also another place where you can get that kind of growth, to have someone who can, you know, tell you what you ought to be thinking about, or being a good sounding board for you as you're kind of going through your career and having maybe some situations where you need to think about what you're going to do. And of course, being a mentor for somebody else, being that person to help push somebody else harder, can help you see things about yourself and help yourself grow as well. So we're kind of getting some good synergy here out of the show on how we might make ourselves better, how we might push ourselves to get to that right place in our lives. And it sounds like that's what you're doing here with your Dream Business Academy, along with your other kind of businesses as well.
Exactly what I'm doing. Yeah, I spend most of my time. I've essentially set up a business now where I work 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, working with my clients and doing interviews like this. And twice a year, I put on my Dream Business Academy. And, you know, I've created my team that will run the different internet businesses for me, so I don't have to spend any time on those. But that was a long time in the making, to be honest with you. And I've had mindset coaches and people that have pushed me and held me accountable as well. So, you know, I speak from which I am familiar with. I've been beaten up just like you. In fact, in my latest book, I wrote about my most embarrassing moment, which was the biggest turning point for me. I don't know how much time we have, but I'd be happy to share that.
Sure, go ahead.
So Like you, I joined this mastermind program, and I got up in front of these people, and there were some pretty successful coaches in there, which is what I was trying to start my coaching program many years ago. And then on a break, one of the guys had a multi-million-dollar coaching business. He took me aside, and he goes, Jim, I want to ask you a question. Now, keep in mind, he's not only familiar with my business and what I'm doing to market it, but he was familiar with what I wasn't doing, because I wasn't a fan of public speaking. I didn't necessarily want to be doing a lot of videos. I certainly didn't want to be putting on my own live events back then. And so the question he asked me was, he said, Jim, what makes you think you're entitled to achieve the same amount of success as some of the people, friends, peers, maybe people in this room, but yet I don't see you willing to put in the same effort, investment, and do the things that they have done to grow their business? Can you explain to me how that works? It was a real, pardon the expression, it was kind of a bitch slap moment, Chris, because it like he held the mirror up to my face, so to speak, and I had to really get honest with myself that if I really did want to have a business like they have, then I really had to man up and become a great speaker and put on my own events and start writing books and doing videos and doing all the different things that I wasn't necessarily comfortable doing early on in my career. And that's the real benefit. That was a very awkward and uncomfortable day for me, but it was absolutely the turning point in my business.
Well, you probably have a lot of appreciation and thanks for that person to have pulled you aside and to really have gone out on a limb to kind of push you to see maybe what you needed to see. So many people in our lives will just hold their tongues and not say something that needs to be said, and we ultimately have to find out that truth ourselves in a much harder, longer, drawn-out process than maybe someone just opening up and giving that to us. So,
Yeah. I thanked him after the fact, probably a year or two later, and I also thanked him for not doing it in front of the group.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that is a very, very good point. Very often people cannot handle that kind of information in front of other people. That just the embarrassment of being in front of other people and getting that kind of critique will immediately cause them to shut down. But you pull someone off aside and you remove that component, people are much more open, they will listen, they'll hear it a bit more. So that's an excellent point I think people need to remember, yep. to do. So, you know, some business owners seem to get kind of stuck in certain places. You talked a little bit about, not being the bottleneck in your business. I know I've been guilty of that in my own company. What do you think people are ultimately scared of? What's the next thing they're kind of worried about or thinking about? It's maybe kind of causing their businesses not to grow. What should they be thinking about?
Well, I mean, the overall arching kind of the 10,000-foot view is fear. But, you know, lower it down, peel the onion away a little bit. There's perfectionism, the imposter syndrome. You know, the imposter syndrome is where people, whether you're doing 50 grand or 500,000 or $2 million, a lot of people they fear they're going to be found out, which means no matter how much success you achieve, someday you feel like somebody's going to pull back the curtain, kind of like the wizard, and see it's just a man pulling levers back there. And that's a real thing, and that really speaks to the heart of your confidence level and your self-esteem. Perfectionism is not only a drag on business, it has the potential to be a business killer. If you're not going to launch your book, your video, your website, your membership course, whatever it is, if you're not going to pull the trigger unless you think it's absolutely perfect, nothing will ever get done, because there is no such thing as perfect. They're as good as it can be. You absolutely do your best work, but then you pull the trigger and you keep course correcting as you move forward. The third thing I guess I would say is it's the what ifs. It's what I write about in my new book is, you know, after you say yes to something, whether it be a new opportunity or a challenge or something, it's initially we say yes to something, we kind of romanticize the outcome that we'd like. Oh, it's going to be fun to live in a boat, or I'm going to enjoy this new cabin on a lake, or I'm going to open a new business or whatever. And then the what if side of your brain kicks in. Yeah, but what if it doesn't work? What if you waste that money? What if your family, what if you embarrass yourself? I mean, all the what ifs, it's the little voice that's buried in the back of your head that's been recording every bad moment you've had since childhood starts coming up. And you know, people who are really successful, they learn to quickly shut that voice down and say, yeah, but what if it does work? And what if this turns out to be an amazing adventure or wildly successful? And by the way, if it doesn't work, I'm okay with that, because I'm going to move forward. That's a little bit of, I'm oversimplifying the corrective self-talk you need to do, but that's kind of what you need to do. But by and large, most people, you know, when I talk about that statistic, the 80%ers, I guess, those are people that just get really shut down and almost paralyzed with fear about being found out or not being perfect or having people criticize their book because, you know, there's a spelling or grammar on page 22 or something like that.
Yeah, and that's a big, that can be a big fear. I think, you know, Patty talked about it here just a minute ago about this idea of being perfect, right? Having perfectionism kind of push us into just thinking we can never be right, we can never be good enough. And you're right, people that are successful don't worry about that. They worry about what's the overall. If I did the right thing, I made, you know, 8 out of the 10 were good decisions and the other 2 were bad, you know, I'm batting 8 for 10. I mean, that's fantastic. So you're right. People maybe who are middle management, people are struggling to get ahead. People have not taken that leap to be their own boss and go out and be an entrepreneur are probably paralyzed a little bit about that, some of those fears and trying not to be wrong or not to have regret or whatever it may be.
Again, I don't know how much time we have, but can I give you a strategy that would help people overcome that?
Sure.
So it's not instantaneous, and it definitely takes a little bit of work, but one of the decisions you can make as an entrepreneur is I'm going to choose to be judged on the value of the content and the value of the information and the service that I'm providing and not the imperfect way in which I provide it, which means my imperfect book, which I'm quite sure that my books are nowhere near perfect, although I do work with a very good editor. I'm sure every time we publish a book, there's a spelling or grammar or missed comma somewhere. But my books are doing really well. They're helping people. And so what I tell people is my imperfect book is better than your book that's been sitting in your word processor for the last 2 years while you try and find the last missing comma. And the reason I'm okay with that is because I do believe that everybody has a skill and a talent and something to share. And to deny that because you're afraid people will find out that you're not perfect when in reality everybody knows nobody is perfect is like doing an injustice to yourself. So just choose to be judged on the quality of the information and the service and the value you're providing and not the imperfect way in which you provide it.
Well, I think that's a great way to look at it, and I appreciate you kind of pushing us there. One of the kind of fun questions that we always like to ask our guests, and maybe you have a good answer, is there a book you're reading right now that you might tell us about?
You know, the interesting thing for about the last year, I'm a voracious reader, and I actually, when we moved out of our house, I donated to some different groups and charities my entire library because I can't fit it on my boat. But I actually, because your producer told me you might ask me this question. So, you know, the honest answer, Chris, I am reading manuals about all the systems on my boat. So if you're looking for probably the last business book that I read about a year ago was a book by Gene Simmons, the bass player for Kiss. He wrote a book called Me, Inc. And, yeah, he's a guy that's full of vibrato and a big ego, but that's okay. He's very successful. But it's a book that in which he describes his own personal journey as an entrepreneur, you know, not just a musician. And it was very enlightening. And I think if people read that and realize how many things that he's done in his life, from musician to producer to actor to speaker to owning a very successful marketing company, he's done it all without any formal training in any of it. And it's enlightening. It's almost empowering for people who think, I need special training to do this, that, or the other thing, when all you got to do is really get started.
Well, how can people get a hold of you if they're interested in learning more and want to work with you and your company?
So, my home base is getjimpalmer.com, getjimpalmer.com. If they're interested in attending my Dream Business Academy, that is Dream Biz Academy, dreambizacademy.com. And my coaching program is Dream Biz Coaching, dreambizcoaching.com.
Well, fantastic. Jim, thanks so much for being a part of the show today. Kind of loved all the stuff you're talking about. Maybe we can have you come back at some point and give us an update on all the cool things you're doing and if you're still living on the yacht.
Would love to do it, Chris. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks everyone for listening today. Hopefully you gained something important or memorable or impactful that can help your own career in a positive way. Next week, my guest will be Angela Lambsback, Senior Team Leader of Staffing at ZipRecruiter, and then Reva Lesanowski. I probably have screwed that one up. At least I've done one today, so that... Yeah. It would be bad luck if I didn't screw up someone's name on the show. She's a CEO and president of Grow Biz Media. So until then, do what you love, find out how to say people's names, and show the world how talented you can be today.
You've been listening to Talent Talk Radio, brought to you by People G2.